My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Here's the 1-2. A swing and a miss, strike three. As Shota gets Clement. Could have guessed that was the splitter. The pitch. Called strike three. Schneider throws it with a splitter as the Blue Jays go down in order here in the top half of the fourth inning.
We're back live with more Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
Cubs fall to the Blue Jays 1-0 yesterday. I know Sean Sears was sleeping in a pillow soaked with tears after that one. Is that what it was? Is that what was going on
That's
yesterday,
exactly
Sean?
Exactly what it was, man. That was a tough one. No, that was one like we talked about at the top of this hour, top of the show here. Like, the Cubs have let some go get away. There were some opportunities in that game, but like when you get such a good start from your guy, Shohei Imanaga, who's just been eating innings for you all year, you've got to reward him. And a 1-0 loss like that just can't happen when you're trying to make a playoff push.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's tough to expect a sweep, right? If I told you at the beginning, you said that you guys would get to take the series, you'd be okay with it.
Exactly.
It's just all about how it happens, right? And that's the tough part about it.
I think that's what's kind of like, it's like that bad taste in your mouth. You've just kind of seen this loss happen. Like, I've been joking with Zach Zabin a few times. You and I have done some of the Cubs highlights. It felt like for the first, like, 90 games of the season, the Cubs played the exact same game every night.
That's funny.
Won or lost a one-run game. And that's kind of what it felt like. And you know, it's changed a little bit. The offense has looked a lot better. The bullpen has played a lot better. The pitching has still been pretty solid. There are just kind of some miscues and mistakes where just the Cubs just have no margin for error. So it just feels like Cubs fans are constantly pulling their hair out at the moment.
Yeah, because again, I think, and this is the common theme, is that, you know, everyone's still just trying to figure out who the Cubs actually are.
Right.
You know, and when you lose 1-0 after taking the first two games, you know, handily, let's not forget, even though you won Friday by one, you know, you guys were up, and then, or the Cubs were up, and then Saturday's game, they were up 2 going into the ninth. So, you know, they performed well, right? And then it's just, you know, so you're like, okay, this is a team that is better than the Blue Jays. And then Bonifacio goes out there and obviously, you know, throws 7 innings of beautiful baseball, but is that who you are, where you get shut down by, you know, a pitcher like that? And then when the bullpen comes in, they clean you up. You know what I mean?
I mean, so, it's in, you know, weird weather all weekend. You can make a bunch of excuses. When it comes down to it, like, the Cubs just shouldn't be losing games like that to the Blue Jays. But it's also important to keep in perspective. They took 2 of 3 from the team. They won that series.
Yeah.
More bad teams coming down here, not bad teams, but teams the Cubs should be able to beat. This is kind of where Jed Hoyer talks a lot about, you know, good teams beat up on bad teams. This should be
Sean, this is where it's like, you know, maybe your approach has to change in a particular game, right? Where, all right, you're not hitting the ball well. Maybe you should see some more pitches. You know, only 1 walk yesterday in the game.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, not to say that they weren't taking pitches, but we talked about the Dansby Swanson bases loaded at bat. That was on a 1, you know, he struck out looking on a 1-2 count. You know,
right.
So, you know, getting there is like, all right, you know, and then
you know, you got guys that are, you know, like Saya, Belly, and Horner, 3, 4, 5, you know, all having hits, but just not at the same time, right? It's just, you know, they had situations where they could have capitalized, you know, Pete Crow going, you know, Pete, your boy, Peter, sorry for you, because we know you love Peter.
He's
you know, over 3 yesterday, you know, no strikeouts, but over 3, you know, Wisdom, same thing. I mean, that got for the late scratch start for Isak Paredes, and he goes over 2. So it's like, you know, you can't tell me that because Isak's out of the lineup, then all of a sudden, like the feeling is changed,
right?
You know, in it, you know, that can't be what it is.
That team is it's so weird because you look throughout that lineup, there's really only like 3 guys you look at that you say like can consistently get extra base hits. The rest of these guys are built to either like see pitches, take walks, try and attack pitches, you know, put balls in play. They're all kind of not necessarily looking to do a ton of damage, just kind of get on base. And I get frustrated with it sometimes because, like you said, those guys should be seeing more pitches. But at the same time, too, there's guys like Pete Crow Armstrong there who you want to see develop. So you're caught in this moment here where the Cubs are trying to do both. They're trying to develop a team and also win and be good. The problem right now is, like, you know, guys like Cody Bellinger, guys like Seiya Suzuki, guys like Ian Happ need to play like the best versions of themselves to pull themselves out of where they're at right now. We just haven't seen all those guys play collectively. Or like you said, Gabe, like they'll all have like doubles, but like one comes in the third, one comes in the fourth, or like they hit a double of 2 outs, or like the Cubs hit a triple and then, you know, ground into a double play to end the inning. It just doesn't seem to be in succession. And it's frustrating to watch sometimes.
Yeah, Craig Counsell talked after the game at length about a lot of different things. You know, speaking of just the offense, right, he did mention that, you know, the Cubs, unfortunately, just weren't able to deliver offensively yesterday.
Like, you couldn't, you know, the ball in the air today was no good. You know, probably Miggy's ball is the only ball that really cost us. Maybe an extra base hitter here or there, but same for them. So it was, you know, it was kind of the high fastball and the split. So the fastball was in the air and the split was on the ground. And we couldn't do much against him.
Yeah, and then, I mean, even the home run ball, right, where, you know, that at-bat to, I mean, what Shota was, the approach was there to Lopefito. Like, the approach was there, but every pitch was high, right? Even the slider missed high in a way on that one. And then, you know, then maybe your scouting report is wrong, right? You didn't throw him one splitter low at all 4 go up, and then he takes one, obviously turns on it and puts it over the fence. And that was tough to see because, you know, Shota wished he could have probably threw a little something different right there. Craig Counsell also talked about, you know, what the Blue Jays did well against Shota Imanaga yesterday in terms of at bats.
They didn't look, the first inning kind of cost Shota some pitches for sure. They did a nice job in the first inning, just extending some at bats and getting into some fouling off some pitches, getting some long at bats. So that, I think it was 31 or so pitches in the first inning, which, you know, clearly probably took an inning from him. You know, he hit that ball good. I mean, you had to hit a ball really good today to get it out, and he hit, you know, give him credit, he hit a ball really good. And then offensively, we did, our bullpen did a heck of a job, you know, putting up some zeros and keep giving the offense a chance with just a one-run deficit. But we just, you know, no leadoff hitters on, you know. So what, didn't get a man to third, or I guess the bases loaded inning was the only guy we got to third, and so not a lot of rallies.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, it's tough, right? And like we talked about it. With Josh Rock and Caleb Williams, the inevitable dud game. And sometimes you get beat 1-0 throughout the course of a season. And it's just unfortunate it happened right there. But, you know, when the pitcher, like we mentioned, when Francis is dealing the way that he was dealing, Craig Counsell will tell you there's not much he could have done.
Well, this was an opportunity for sure. You know, we pitched well, but it, you know, it takes all phases. And to put together the streaks, you got to deliver in all phases, and we just weren't able to deliver offensively today. You know, 3 1 run games, came out on top on 2 of them, but obviously look at today as a missed opportunity.
Yeah, and I think most Cubs fans would, as we were mentioning earlier, you know, taking or the opportunity to sweep the Blue Jays and continue on the hot streak, build off that momentum. And I mentioned before, if you include the Cincinnati Reds, the teams that are above the Chicago Cubs currently in the wild card race over the last 10 games, Cubs were the only ones that were above 500. Right. So it was another opportunity for to just continue to stack those wins up because, you know, they are ahead of certain teams in the loss column. So, you know, everyone knows the importance of the, every game. Right. When we know this. But ultimately, you would have wished something else would have happened. And maybe if Isak Paredes was in the game and his little five hole, then maybe some things would have been different. But Craig Council talked about why he felt he needed the day off.
Yeah, he was throwing pregame, just doing his normal daily work, and his shoulder was barking, basically. So just give him a day off of throwing.
You just got to give a guy a day off. You know what I'm saying? Like, just, you know, you got to come up with some weird reason. But ultimately, you're just like, yeah, just, you got to give a guy a day off. That's ultimately what happened there. But Cubs will certainly be back at full strength for their next series. But Shota Imanaga, I mean, what can you say? Just where most haters were out there like, oh, that's not going to last. Even I kind of said that a little bit, like, ah, talk to me when they, even he said it. I was just repeating what Shota said. Talk to me when I've seen these guys twice, or talk to me when they, you know, when I have seen them again. If I get success, then we can talk about that. But Shota through via the interpreter, talked a little bit post game. First, just on the home run pitch to La Profeta.
So yeah, with today, you know, the wind was blowing out to right field. So for lefties, you know, they're probably going to pull it. And the fact that that pitch, you know, if it was in the zone, maybe I'd be a little more frustrated. But the fact that, you know, it was a ball and, you know, the approach against the hitters was, you know, try to go up in the zone. So the fact that he did hit that out, like, you just got to tip your cap.
Yeah, and I think that, like, you would think more hitters would take that approach, right? I mean, obviously it's harder if depending on your swing to get around on that high fastball. But if you know that's Shota Imanaga's MO, right? He's going to hit you with the fastball high, up and out of the zone, and then he's going to get you with the splitter right outside of the zone at the bottom end of it. And so, you know, keeping your eye level going to different places, that's what allows Shota to be so deceptive. But if you're anticipating it and you say to yourself, okay, you know what? I'm not swinging at the splitter. I am only going to wait for the fastball up and out of the zone. And if I get one that's just right there in my wheelhouse, or if I'm adjusting my swing to anticipate that, you know, in the cages, maybe you're taking BP with some high pitches, again, eliminating the splitter, then something like that could potentially happen. So, but hearing Shota talk about his frustration is interesting.
It's funny you talk about that, though, because that's like, that's been what his like success has been. He hasn't been a guy that pitched really high in Japan, but for some reason, even though he's only throwing like 93, his stuff looks so much faster at the top right of the zone. So guys are swinging through it. So then he sets them up for the splitter and they basically tunnel off each other. So a guy thinks he's getting fastball. Instead, he swings 387 on a splitter. It's fun, but it's crazy. I don't think that guy thought he was going to get that ball as well as he did, and I don't think Shota thought he did either. So it was just kind of funny. They both were like, "Oh wow, that's
the perfect moment,
yeah, right,
right there," which is crazy. Shota also talked about the notion of feeling a little heavier yesterday.
So in terms of today, you know, my body felt a little heavier. It wasn't moving as well as I wanted to, but in terms of, you know, comparing it to last year, you know, my body feels good. Like, I don't have any pain anywhere. Nothing hurts. So I think the goal is to, you know, try to do the best I can, depending on how I feel that day, and then go from there.
Yeah, heavier. He's like Keenan Allen, you know. So once you've been in Chicago for a little bit, that is ultimately what just happened. You just feel a little bit heavier over the course. But again, Cubs lose 1-0 yesterday. Next game tomorrow, 7:05 p.m. is the first pitch. It will be heard right here on 670 The Score. Cubs taking on the Tigers tomorrow, both with identical records. Both teams sitting at 61-64, 3 games below 500, 6-4 in their last 10. Cubs sending out Javier Assad tomorrow. How are you feeling about that, Sean? Mr. Assad. Because I always like him when he's on the bump.
I like Javier Assad a lot. He's a fun pitcher. He's been kind of not himself since returning from the IL. He's been hurt was hurt a little bit and came back. He just hasn't quite been able to go the distance like he normally is. But, you know, when Javi's at his best, he's not necessarily striking dudes out, but just getting a ton of soft contact, smart, efficient. Edward Alzolay called him like a pro. You know, he said, like, that guy pitched a ton before he got to here in the majors. But, like, he's got a ton of experience, and we've kind of seen it. But the other Javier I'm excited to see is Javier Baez. His first time coming back to Wrigley Field with the Tigers since he
will they boo him? Will they boo him?
Absolutely not. No, they will not boo Javier.
They
Baez.
Better not boo him, because I heard, you know, I remember I had this big conversation where I was like, you know, when Rizzo comes to to play the White Sox, or, you know, or Chris Bryant, they're not booing him or Schwarber. But Javi comes to play the White Sox and they're booing him. And I'm like, why are they booing Javi? And so I'm wondering, you know, what that reception is going to be like from Cubs fans. If there's this like weird stigma associated with Javi Baez, where people are going to, you know,
I don't think they'll boo him. It will be kind of a bummer that if he like just has like a crazy Javi Baez series. Like, I could see him just getting kind of amped up being back at Wrigley, because it just feels like he does like crazy things there.
That's what he does to the White Sox when he's playing in Chicago. He's like, all these people here are gonna talk about me. I gotta have a great game. It's like, well, that's how he gets hyped up for it.
When he got traded to the Mets, they like booed him his first like couple weeks, and he like shook his finger, and then in post game was like, that was bad. Like, you shouldn't do that. And then he like turned his season around, and they were in love with Javier Baez. But there was a moment where I was like, New York might kill Javi Baez. But yeah. No, he's not going to get booed. The Cubs fans, dude, I still see Javier Baez jerseys all around Wrigley.
Always.
So
we'll
with Rizzo and Bryant, and that'll always be the thing. But no, he's going to be... I don't know if they'll boo him, but they might loathe him a little bit if he kind of has like a turn back the clock Javi series at Wrigley.
Yeah, he's like, why didn't you do... Well, I'm excited to see what the video tribute looks like.
Oh,
are you
man.
A fan of video tributes?
If I'm there in the moment, sure. But like, I don't know. I'm still like that 2016 team. Give me like five more years and I feel like I'll be able to look back on it. I still look back at it now and I'm still bummed to some extent, just because
you sound like me. You sound like me as a Sox fan, you know, after the 2005 World Series, when I'd be like, they'd be like, dude, and, you know, Cubs fans would be like, dude, it's almost a decade, dude. It's going to be a decade since you guys won. You're still talking about that? And I was like, and then when the Cubs won, I was like, hey, don't let a decade pass before you guys win a World Series, because you guys are going to hear the end of that shit. Never, dude. We're going to win this. We're going to win that. I'm like, okay. And then here you are talking about, I can't even look back 8 years ago because I still feel like it was yesterday.
No, well, like, it's that. And it's also like, I'm just bummed that there wasn't more with that group. But no, the video tribute, especially for a guy like Javi Baez, like, I mean, geez, pick a highlight, right? He's got like 400.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're definitely going to put the video tribute up there for Javi Baez. He deserves it. And the fans should give him, it should be ruckus in there. It should be crazy in there. It should be so loud. And I think that they deserve, the three of them, Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez, you know, the loudest ovations that, you know, some Cubs, you know, greats have ever gotten, right? Because I think that, what, you know, you win a World Series and you contribute at that level, you deserve praise at any turn of the court, regardless if you're playing for the Tigers or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, if people are getting excited for Ben Zobrist showing up, like, come on. Yeah, hey. You got to be showing up for those guys.
Exactly.
Just once they retire, they come out of the league, I'm sure like they'll end up being like analysts for Marquee or something. And
yeah. Javi Baez will never pay for anything when he's walking around the city of Chicago. If he goes to dinner, it's Javi Baez. He'll be able to do that. But again, you will be able to hear how Javi Baez does. Again, that'll be tomorrow, 7:05 p.m. We talked to you 6 o'clock. Mark Grody jumps on for the little half hour, 6 to 6:30, and then pregame will begin for Cubs Tigers again. That'll happen tomorrow. All right, we still got a lot of stuff to talk about, man. We're gonna jump into Twitter time a little bit later on the show. Want to do a little bit of mix of pop culture, a little bit of mix of, and because there's a lot, Sean. You know, with all the DNC being here and the road closures and such. People certainly have a lot of things to say on Twitter about that. But just coming up next, from Pro Football Focus and the 33rd team, we get to talk to Sam Monson about some of the other rookies on this Bears team and some of the rookies around the league. How does he think they'll fare? We'll talk to Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus after the break. Don't go anywhere. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
We're back, live with more Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score.
No, I mean, I've been here, like, been in it before. I mean, I feel like, of course, in high school, you come in as a freshman, not too many freshmen come in ranked number one, and then I feel like you start working your way up, you go through it, and then you get to being considered one of the top DBs in the country in high school, and then the same thing in college. So I feel like, for me, I'm just getting back to where I'm used to being at, and I feel like, for me, it's just finding new goals, new motivation to continue to stay at the top.
That was Jalen Johnson just kind of talking about himself and, you know, how great he thinks he is, but he's not the only one that thinks he's great. The guy that I'm about to talk to next put Jalen Johnson on his perfect defense. So we get to find out what were the qualifications to land alongside Sauce Gardner. It's Gabe Ramirez here on 670 The Score, hanging out for about another half an hour. But we do get an opportunity to talk to our next guest from Pro Football Focus and the 33rd team. It is my guy, Sam Monson. Sam, welcome back to the show, man. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me back.
So, Jalen Johnson, if you're a Bears fan, you love seeing it on the other side. I mean, I saw Steve's pick of Devin Witherspoon and Patrick Surtain, some younger guys over there. But you went with Sauce and Jalen Johnson. Tell me what you felt like was your criteria for putting Jalen Johnson into your perfect defense.
Yeah, so we were both, drafting players. We were alternating through, so you couldn't just pick the best players all the way along. You had to kind of rely on what the other guy was going to pick. Sauce Gardner, I think a cornerback is the one sort of clear best corner in the NFL just on a year-to-year basis. And corner is a tricky position because it's so volatile year-to-year. You know, I think a lot of other positions in the NFL, you've got a really good idea before the season what the top couple of guys are going to look like. You know, they don't really change. Edge rusher is a good example. The top guys are the top guys, and the order might change a bit, but all those guys are going to have great seasons barring injury. Cornerback, I think, is a lot more up and down than that. It's a lot more volatile. And these guys can have amazing years and then kind of disappear into the background or come from nowhere and have an amazing year. So, you know, Jalen Johnson last season, absolutely phenomenal production, showed really high level. You know, people call it instinct sometimes, but I think most of those plays are, it's tape study. You know, it's smart. It's being in the film and seeing what teams are doing, seeing route combinations, tendencies, what they like to do. And he made a bunch of plays that showcased he really understands the game. He really understands opponents, and he's able to capitalize. So, you know, given the season that he had, I think you have to give him credit and say right now he's one of the guys you want.
Yeah, and he's reinvigorated. He talked about it, playing with the young guys on this defense. You know, we're talking about Jaquan Brisker, Kyler Gordon. And so that, you know, when you're looking at this defense, a lot of people are trying to put a label, whether it's top 10, top 5. Well, you've seen him play well. I mean, even over the, you know, the preseason, starters getting in there, just kind of playing at a level that they feel like they should be playing at. When you look at this Bears defense, a lot of people were talking about Caleb Williams, but are they? I'm assuming if Jalen Johnson's on your radar, then the entire defense is as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting group. It's a young group, and I think they kind of played ahead of themselves last season. I think they had better production than maybe the overall personnel would suggest. And they kind of doubled down on that, right? They've relied on these young guys, Gervon Dexter, a defensive tackle, Tyreek Stevenson, a corner, even, you know, the sort of lower down the depth chart guys like Terrell Smith, a corner. They're going to rely on a lot of these young guys to just keep going and get better and continue that growth. And if they can, then, yeah, it could be a really good defense. They made significant moves with a couple of veterans, obviously Montez Sweat coming in last season to sort of fix the pass rush, at least give them one consistent, solid source of pressure on a regular basis. You know, Kevin Byard coming in, he's been one of the better safeties in the league since he's been playing in the National Football League. They definitely have pieces now in place for this to be a really good defense. But I think it is going to rely on those young guys, you know, at least taking a little bit of a step forward together. And that's always a bit of a risk when you're talking about young players.
Yeah, and it's going to be tough. And obviously they're trying to build it out. Ryan Poles has done an excellent job of creating a core and building around it and adding depth. And it's going to be interesting to see how that defense actually plays out. On the other side of the ball, you know, the Bears offensive line has been under the microscope, you know, for some years now. How does like PFF grade their performance, you know, heading into the season, or the expectations of their performance heading into the seasons? And then what area do you feel like, you know, they just need to improve on the most when it comes to that offensive line?
I think this offensive line this year is going to be a really interesting case study in how much quarterback play can affect the offensive line, you know,
and right, exactly.
And Justin Fields, you know, we've seen it already in preseason with Pittsburgh. Justin Fields held onto the ball longer than any other quarterback in the league. And that stresses an offensive line every single rep. And okay, there are going to be plays where, you know, pressure gets given up. And because Justin Fields is a special athlete, he can get out of the sack and he can turn a negative play into a positive. But overall, when you have the slowest average time to throw in the NFL, you're making your offensive line's job harder over the course of the season, over the course of 600 dropbacks. Those guys are being stressed far more than other offenses. And you know, the difference between, say, Tua, who had the fastest average time to throw in the NFL, and Justin Fields, it's more than a second every single time. And that's the difference between pressure and nothing. It's the difference between pressure and a sack. Like, it's huge. So I think everyone's kind of maligning this offensive line and saying it's not very good, it's a problem. Immediately, I think just by changing the quarterback, it's going to look significantly better. And then you get into, well, okay, now what does the personnel look like? And, you know, are we going to see young players getting a step better? Guys like Darnell Wright at right tackle. You know, there's a lot of youth on this group as well. So I think it'll look better right away. And then I think it might actually get better because it also has some young guys that can develop and get better as things go. So I think this line, you know, it doesn't need to become great. It doesn't even need to become good. If it just gets back towards being an average group with Caleb Williams back there, I think it's going to look very, very different.
That's such a great point, Sam. And I'm going to use that moving forward. Like, just a reminder, right? Like, a good quarterback that can get rid of the ball quickly can make the offensive line look better, or yeah, not even better than it is, but just better as a whole, right? And I think that being able to watch that is going to be interesting. And there's another component to that as well, right? And it is what the offense looks like. Bears adding Shane Waldron from the Seattle Seahawks. Do you look at that as a lateral move or an upgrade? Because Luke Getsy still gets the call to, you know, to pick up an OC job in the NFL, which was shocking to a lot of Bears fans. So I'm curious thoughts on Shane Waldron and his move to the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's potentially a bit of an upgrade. But again, it's a schematic difference that I think might help that group and that offensive line. And then the other element that we haven't talked about is the difference in receivers. And, you know, receivers impact an offensive line. It doesn't sound like that makes much sense until you think, you know, when a quarterback is viewing the defense and sort of scanning the field, if he's got open guys, he gets the ball out of his hands quicker. And that makes the offensive line's job easier and it makes them look better. So when Tom Brady's offensive line in New England fell apart, the year that happened was the year that he had no receivers and nobody was getting open. And suddenly, what was basically the same offensive line on paper started to look like a real problem, I think the root cause was nobody getting open. Now Chicago has got DJ Moore and Roman Dunze and Keenan Allen and this group of receivers that should be open consistently. So the quarterback is not going to be holding onto the ball because nobody's getting open. It's going to be a completely different world. I think the offense wants to operate on a quicker basis. It wants to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands. It's getting him on the move as well. If preseason is anything to go by, you know, Caleb Williams already looks like one of the best throwers on the run in the NFL. And this offense looks like it's going to employ that. It's going to put him on design rollouts and bootlegs and get him operating in space where the offensive line isn't blocking a sort of true drop back pass set where they're most exposed to getting beat by pass rushers. So overall, I really like what this offense has put together and what it could be this year.
Yeah, and that's why they had a guy like Mercedes Lewis to take care of that end outside of a left tackle or a right tackle. We're talking to Sam Monson from PFF here on 670. The Score, it's Gabe Ramirez hanging out with you guys. Sam, we're talking about Caleb Williams, and I'm curious in your mind, you know, a lot of people here in the city, there's a contingent, I should say, not a lot, but a contingent, that would expect the Bears to make it to the playoffs. And my question to you is, if that is to be true, how good does Caleb Williams need to be, or is it going to be more of a team effort to get them to that threshold?
It'll be a team effort, but I think he would need to be pretty good for that to be the outcome. You know, if it was a bad division where nobody's expected to be good, then maybe. And, you know, if it was a really weak conference where the wildcard teams are supposed to be terrible, but even just within the NFC North, okay, Minnesota's season might be a write-off now without their quarterback, but Detroit figures to be one of the best teams in the conference. They were not a fluke NFC championship team. They were a couple of plays away from being in the Super Bowl. They, I think, have only reinforced in the offseason. You know, the Lions should be one of the best teams in the league. Green Bay are so young and so talented. You know, they should be better than they were a year ago. They only kind of got half a season of that run to get themselves into the postseason. If they're able to do that for a full year, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with as well. So, you know, it's not going to be easy for a team coming out of this division to make the playoffs. It's certainly attainable, and Caleb Williams has that kind of talent, but expecting it, I think, is optimistic.
I love it. Let's go and talk NFL on a larger scale. You know, obviously, I could talk Bears with you all day, Sam, and get your opinion, but also curious about, you know, thoughts on a lot of the newness in the NFL, especially the, you know, the dual threat quarterback, right? You've seen, you know, we're talking about guys moving on, guys throwing on the run. You saw Bo Nix put a lot of that on display. You see Jaden Daniels getting out there. I'm curious, you know, your thoughts on needing a quarterback that can do a little bit of both, or, you know, what your ideal quarterback looks like, and what do you think of the new quarterbacks coming into the league this year outside of Caleb Williams?
Yeah, I mean, I think all that sort of stuff is cyclical. You know, when Joe Montana came into the league way back in the early 80s, people were amazed that he was a scrambling quarterback. You know, he was mobile, and that was a revolutionary thing because the last wave of quarterbacks before Joe Montana had been these statue-like pocket passers. But obviously, Joe Montana compared with, you know, Caleb Williams or any of these sort of current Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, like the athletes are just getting better. So I think these things come in cycles, whether it's these prototypical pocket passers, whether it's these scrambling quarterbacks, these dual threat guys. But as the years go by, the athletes just across the board are getting better and better and better. So, you know, now you have these unique, absolute weapons like Lamar Jackson, like Josh Allen, and quarterbacks that we just haven't seen before. I do think that it brings something different. You know, Joe Burrow is phenomenal. Maybe he's the next one of the sort of more conventional pocket passers, and there's very little that he can't do, but there are plays Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson can make when things break down that Burrow can't. And sometimes that's going to be the difference between, you know, winning a game and not winning a game. When you really need to play, Josh Allen can run over a linebacker or he can run around a defensive back, and that just gives you more ways to win. So I think there's definitely something to wanting a guy that has those special plays as his range of outcomes, because sooner or later you're going to need one.
Do you look at Josh Allen as an MVP candidate?
I think he's definitely a candidate in any given year. I mean, he's going to make more mistakes. He's going to be more sort of turnover prone, I think, than some other quarterbacks, but he makes such an insane volume of big plays, of special plays, of key plays, that it does really offset that. And, you know, a lot of the times we talk about that for quarterbacks that are kind of volatile and make a lot of big plays and a lot of bad mistakes. And you say, well, you just need to make enough that it offsets. Like, Allen is one of the rare quarterbacks where it genuinely is true. He makes more than his fair share of mistakes, but he radically makes up for it by the number of crazy big plays he makes. And that's what makes him so, you know, so impressive for the Bills.
Yeah, I think if he can end up on top of his division, you know, and without Stephon Diggs, kind of just get up there to 12, 13 wins, I think he'd definitely be in the conversation. Breakout players for 2024, guys that, you know, were on the cusp last year, but you're expecting bigger things from them.
Breakout players. I mean, I think one of those Packers receivers may well break out. I wouldn't be surprised to see Dontavian Wicks really emerge as their number one guy. You know, everyone is sort of questioning, do Green Bay even have a number one receiver? Do they need one? I don't know that they do, but if I was going to put money on one of them, I think Dontavian Wicks has shown the ability to really do everything in that offense and maybe emerge as that number one guy. I think really a lot of those receivers in Green Bay have got talent. And then the other guy I think could be in line for a really big year is the tight end up in Buffalo, Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah,
he was really impressive as a rookie. He's going to be, I think, a very high workload guy this season because Stephon Diggs got traded away, because they haven't really got a sort of perfect like-for-like replacement. I think that offense is going to pivot. I think a lot of it is going to run through Kincaid.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. I know people talk about him and Shakir, seeing if he's going to pick up some stuff. And I like Keon Coleman, too. That offense is going to be interesting to see what Josh Allen does there. Our last one I got for you, are you a believer in the Atlanta Falcons and what they're doing up there, especially all the recent moves on that defensive side of the ball? Are you a believer?
Yeah, I like the additions that they made. Look, I think as soon as you added Kirk Cousins to that roster, they became the favorite for that division, and they became a playoff team. And then the question is, okay, now what can you do about the defensive side of the ball? Because that's definitely lagging behind. They spent a bunch of draft picks on defense. They've already lost one of them in Braylon Trice going down for the season, really before he's been out there at all. So they then tried to bring in some veterans and offset that. And, you know, Matthew Judon, I think, is maybe not quite as good, but has the chance to do a kind of Montez Sweat job on that defense, give them one real consistent source of edge rusher pressure. And then bringing in Justin Simmons, that gives them a really nice safety duo now with Jesse Bates and Justin Simmons there. You know, Simmons, I think, can still absolutely play and is still a really good player at that spot. So maybe the defense is still the weaker side of the ball, but I think it's now getting closer and potentially getting to the point where this can really be a team that does get to the postseason and threaten some people.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the NFC looks like and what teams are going to be able to creep into that sixth and seventh spot when playoff time comes. Sam, I appreciate your time, man, and the great insight you just gave on the NFL, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime. Take it easy, guys.
Sam Monson from PFF and the 33rd team hanging out here on 670 The Score. Make sure you guys follow him. It's great stuff. I love guys that are buttoned up, you know, where I know my stuff, but I'm like the fun fan guy. So when I can like balance me out with like that kind of a guy, it's perfect. Because then I can just ask my questions of what I really want. But asking what the Falcons is intentional, right? Like, you hear about it, but there's a guy like Sam Monson who has all that PFF data. Does he believe in it too? You know, like, what are you thinking over there? Josh Allen MVP? Is that what's going to happen on the AFC side? Is there going to be some regression from Patrick Mahomes? I mean, look, we could pay attention to the Bears. Sometimes I'm curious what's going on the other side of the fence. All right, we got one last segment before we get up out of here, man. It's been great stuff as always. You can follow me right now during the break at Chicago_Gabe. Follow me on Twitter. I'll follow you back. And then on the other side, we'll do a little Twitter time. You see what I did there? Chicago_Gabe. Follow me. I'll follow you back. It's Gabe Ramirez right here on 670 The Score.
Well, what do you know? I got an admirer.
You spend so much time on Twitter, you're not enjoying the better things in life.
All those idiots on Twitter.
It's Twitter time with Gabe Ramirez.
I only want to know one thing. Can you cuss on Twitter?
I give a rat's ass about Twitter.
To be brutally honest, I'm not a Twitter guy.
Let's scroll through some tweets.
Chirp, chirp.
Gabe Ramirez here on 670 The Score. Oh, I love Twitter time. Just an opportunity for a little bit of pop culture and a little bit of sports here on 670 The Score. All right, let's kick things off. This one from the Chicago Fire says five players, five media members, one trophy. They did a guac challenge, and they had media members like Anna Belovoff from WGN. They had Natalie Bumke from Fox 32. And I was the MC for the event, so I wasn't a judge. They should have had me as a judge. I mean, I know my guacamole. But I just posted that up as well on my Instagram account, so make sure you guys check that out. But it was a good time. Shout out to the Chicago Fire for putting that thing together. Next up.
Sure.
This from Kirk Cousins is really like that on Twitter. Kirk Cousins, that we were talking about earlier, today's his birthday, apparently. And they let him pick the music for, you know, training camp. So this is what his playlist was. Jimmy Eat World, The Middle, All American Rejects, Move Along, Green Day, Fountains of Wayne, Blink 182, Good Charlotte, The Killers, Gym Class Heroes, Foo Fighters, Fall Out Boy, Maroon 5, and All Time Low. Now, you know, Kirk likes to walk around with a chain. I'm surprised there wasn't no hip hop artists in there. All right, next up.
Chirp, chirp.
This from Windy City Productions says, Ryan Poles, if you can read this, I love you. I think a lot of Chicagoans feel like
Bears.
All right, next up.
Sure, sure.
This one says, to all, I've seen a lot of tweets like this, not necessarily this one, but like this week, where people are trying to come to grips with their Caleb Williams, Justin Fields decisions. And it says, to all Team Caleb in the dumbass Civil War, congratulations, you were spot on, 100% correct. And you were right, the second Ryan Poles accepted the sixth for Justin Fields, and everything Caleb has done backs you up. No more debate, no more receipts. You were right. Can't we move on now? Have you even heard, I even saw like Dan Weider tweeting something about that, like, raise your hand if you can admit that you were wrong or something like that. And it's just like, can we stop? Please stop. But I get it. People need to click something. All right, next up.
Chirp, chirp.
This from Gibbo Anxious, G-I-B-B-O Anxious. Michael Keaton brought the house down at Kent State University when he ended his commencement speech with, I don't mean. Oh, that's got to be great. You bring him out, you don't know what he's going to do. Then he does something like that. Ah, I love it. All right, last one.
Chirp, chirp.
This from Be Better, Be Effing Better on Twitter. Of course, the DNC is here in Chicago, dealt with a lot of the road closures today. I was at Froth. Shout out to Michael Salvatore, who is the owner of Froth and Bunker, which is a really cool bar over there on Monroe. And, you know, we were there, we were chilling, but of course there was a lot of closures, and we were talking about, you know, everything that was going on. But Steve Kerr, head coach of the Golden State Warriors, was in Chicago, a place that he's very familiar with, the United Center. And gave a DNC speech, and Be Better on Twitter wrote, night night, Steve Kerr with a great DNC speech. So I'm sure I'll be able to check that out a little bit later, but it's been good stuff here in Chicago. Chicago's wild right now, man. People are everywhere. I'll tell you that. A lot of people being told to work from home, my wife included. So I'll be hanging out here with her. All right, I want to thank my guests for today, Josh Schrock from NBC Sports Chicago, for hanging out. Shocker always does a great job. Want to thank Sam Monson from PFF and the 33rd team for hanging out today. Great stuff as always. Want to thank my producer for today, the shadiest, Sean Sears.
Chirp, chirp.
Dude, stop being lazy. Get yourself a sounder thing, bro.
Terrible. Take a lap.
Thank you. All right. That's it. Mi gente. That means my people. Hasta la próxima. That means until next time, which will be Wednesday, 2 to 6. I'll be filling in. I guess not filling in because it's a vacant seat. So I'll be doing a show with Matt Spiegel on Wednesday.
But it's a major award. I want it.
It is a major award, and a lot of people want it. But this is Chicago, and I have the utmost confidence that we are going to have a great addition to the Score. Someone that is going to bring some new energy, new life. And I can't wait to see what ends up happening. But I know that this station is in good hands. All right, I'm out. I'll see you guys Wednesday, 2 to 6. Bet MGM tonight is up next. So we'll see you guys later, man. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Buenas noches.
va faire lever peut-être Marcel Cerdan. Le double pump, Bonjassi une fois. Wembanyama! Pa-pa-pa! Aïe-aïe-aïe-aïe!
Well, what do you know? I got an admirer.
You spend so much time on Twitter, you're not enjoying the better things in life.
All those idiots on Twitter.
It's Twitter time with Gabe Ramirez.
I only want to know one thing. Can you cuss on Twitter?
I give a rat's ass about Twitter.
To be brutally honest, I'm not a Twitter guy.
Let's scroll through some tweets.
Chirp, chirp.
Gabe Ramirez here on 670 The Score. Oh, I love Twitter time. Just an opportunity for a little bit of pop culture and a little bit of sports here on 670 The Score. All right, let's kick things off. This one from the Chicago Fire says five players, five media members, one trophy. They did a guac challenge, and they had media members like Anna Belovoff from WGN. They had Natalie Bumke from Fox 32. And I was the MC for the event, so I wasn't a judge. They should have had me as a judge. I mean, I know my guacamole. But I just posted that up as well on my Instagram account, so make sure you guys check that out. But it was a good time. Shout out to the Chicago Fire for putting that thing together. Next up.
Sure.
This from Kirk Cousins is really like that on Twitter. Kirk Cousins that we were talking about earlier. Today's his birthday, apparently. And they let him pick the music for, you know, training camp. So this is what his playlist was. Jimmy Eat World the Middle, All American Rejects Move Along, Green Day, Fountains of Wayne, Blink 182, Good Charlotte, The Killers, Gym Class Heroes, Foo Fighters, Fall Out Boy, Maroon 5, and All Time Low. Now, you know Kirk likes to walk around with a chain. I'm surprised there wasn't no hip-hop artists in there. All right, next up.
Chirp, chirp.
This from Windy City Productions says, Ryan Poles, if you can read this, I love you. I think a lot of Chicagoans feel like
Bears.
All right, next up.
Sure.
This one says, to all, I've seen a lot of tweets like this, not necessarily this one, but like this week, where people are trying to come to grips with their Caleb Williams, Justin Fields decisions. And it says, to all Team Caleb in the dumbass Civil War, congratulations, you were spot on, 100% correct, and you were right, the second Ryan Poles accepted the sixth for Justin Fields, and everything Caleb has done backs you up. No more debate, no more receipts, you were right. Can't we move on now? Have you even heard, I even saw like Dan Weider tweeting something about that, like, raise your hand if you can admit that you were wrong, or something like that, and it's just like, can we stop? Please stop. But I get it, people need to click something. All right, next up.
Chirp, chirp.
This from Gibbo Anxious? G-I-B-B-O Anxious. Michael Keaton brought the house down at Kent State University when he ended his commencement speech with, I don't know. Oh, that's got to be great. You bring him out, you don't know what he's going to do. Then he does something like that. Ah, I love it. All right, last one.
Chirp, chirp.
This from Be Better. Be effing better on Twitter. Of course, the DNC is here in Chicago. Dealt with a lot of the road closures today. I was at Froth. Shout out to Michael Salvatore, who is the owner of Froth and Bunker, which is a really cool bar over there on Monroe. And, you know, we were there, we were chilling, but of course there was a lot of closures, and we were talking about, you know, everything that was going on. But Steve Kerr, head coach of the Golden State Warriors, was in Chicago, a place that he's very familiar with, the United Center. And gave a DNC speech, and Be Better on Twitter wrote, night, night, Steve Kerr with a great DNC speech. So I'm sure I'll be able to check that out a little bit later, but it's been good stuff here in Chicago. Chicago's wild right now, man. People are everywhere. I'll tell you that. A lot of people being told to work from home, my wife included, so I'll be hanging out here with her. All right, I want to thank my guests for today, Josh Schrock from NBC Sports Chicago, for hanging out. Shocker always does a great job. Want to thank Sam Monson from PFF and the 33rd team for hanging out today. Great stuff as always. Want to thank my producer for today, the shadiest, Sean Sears.
Chirp, chirp.
Dude, stop being lazy. Get yourself a sounder thing, bro.
Terrible. Take a lap.
Thank you. All right. That's it. Mi gente. That means my people. Hasta la próxima. That means until next time, which will be Wednesday, 2 to 6. I'll be filling in. I guess not filling in because it's a vacant seat. So I'll be doing a show with Matt Spiegel on Wednesday.
But it's a major award. I won it.
It is a major award, and a lot of people want it. But this is Chicago, and I have the utmost confidence that we are going to have a great addition to the score, someone that is going to bring some new energy, new life, and I can't wait to see what ends up happening. But I know that this station is in good hands. All right, I'm out. I'll see you guys Wednesday, 2 to 6. Bet MGM tonight is up next. So we'll see you guys later, man. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Buenas noches.
Va faire lever peut-être Marcel Cerdan. Le double pump, Bonjassi une fois. Wembanyama!
From the mind of a 2 foot tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.